cage would collapse onto either side if something pushed its top. The spikes were pointed, sharp slivers of hard wood, which were placed all around the frame and fixed to it. Don Juan said that usually a heavy load of rocks was placed over a net of sticks, which were connected to the cage and hung way above it. When the mountain lion came upon the trap baited with the water rats, it would usually try to break it by pawing it with all its might. Then the slivers would go through its paws, and the cat, in a frenzy, would jump up, unleashing an avalanche of rocks on top of him. "Someday, you might need to catch a mountain lion," he said. "They have special powers. They're terribly smart. The only way to catch them is by fooling them with pain and with the smell of river willows." With astounding speed and skill, he assembled a trap, and after a long wait, he caught three chubby squirrel-like rodents. "He told me to pick a handful of willows from the edge of the swamp and made me rub my clothes with them. He did the same. Then, quickly and skillfully, he wove two simple carrying nets out of the reeds, scooped up a large clump of green plants and mud from the swamp, and carried it back to the mesa, where he concealed himself. In the meantime, the squirrel-like rodents had begun to squeak very loudly. Don Juan spoke to me from his hiding place and told me to use the other carrying net, gather a good chunk of mud and plants, and climb to the lower branches of a tree near the trap where the rodents were. Don Juan said that he didn't want to hurt the cat or the rodents, so he was going to hurl the mud at the lion if it came to the trap. He told me to be on the alert and hit the cat with my bundle after he had, in order to scare it away. He recommended I should be extremely careful not to fall out of the tree. His final instructions were to be so still that I would merge with the branches. I couldn't see where Don Juan was. The squealing of the rodents became extremely loud, and finally it was so dark that I could hardly distinguish the general features of the terrain. I heard a sudden and close sound of soft steps and a muffled cat-like exhalation. Then a very soft growl, and the squirrel-like rodents ceased to squeak. It was right then that I saw the dark mass of an animal right under the tree where I was. Before I could even be sure that it was a mountain lion, it charged against the trap. But before it reached it, something hit it and made it recoil. I hurled my bundle, as Don Juan had told me to do. I missed, yet it made a very loud noise. At that instant, Don Juan let out a series of penetrating yells that sent chills through my spine, and the cat, with extraordinary agility, leaped to the mesa and disappeared. Don Juan kept on making the penetrating noises a while longer, and then he told me to come down from the tree, pick up the cage with the squirrels, run up to the mesa, and get to where he was as fast as I could. In an incredibly short period of time, I was standing next to Don Juan. He told me to imitate his yelling as close as possible in order to keep the lion off while he dismantled the cage and let the rodents free. I began to yell but couldn't produce the same effect. My voice was raspy because of the excitation. He said I had to abandon myself and yell with real feeling because the lion was still around. Suddenly, I fully realized the situation. The lion was real. I let out a magnificent series of piercing yells. Don Juan roared with laughter. He let me yell for a moment, and then he said we had to leave the place as quietly as possible because the lion was no fool and was probably retracing its steps back to where we were. "He'll follow us for sure," he said. "No matter how careful we are, we'll leave a trail as wide as the Pan-American Highway." I walked very close to Don Juan. From time to time, he would stop for an instant and listen. At one moment, he began to run in the dark, and I followed him with my hands extended in front of my eyes to protect myself from the branches. We finally got to the base of the bluff where we'd been earlier. Don Juan said that if we succeeded in climbing to the top without being mauled by the lion, we were safe. He went up first to show me the way. We started to climb in the dark. I didn't know how, but I followed him with dead sure steps. When we were near the top, I heard a peculiar animal cry. It was almost like the mooing of a cow, except that it was a bit longer and coarser. "Up! Up!" Don Juan yelled. I scrambled to the top in total darkness ahead of Don Juan. When he reached the flat top of the bluff, I was already sitting, catching my breath. He rolled on the ground. I thought for a second that the exertion had been too great for him, but he was laughing at my speedy climb. We sat in complete silence for a couple of hours, and then we started back to my car. Sunday, September 3rd, 1961. Don Juan was not in the house when I woke up. I worked over my notes and had time to get some firewood from the surrounding chaparral before he returned. I was eating when he walked into the house. He began to laugh at what he called my routine of eating at noon, but he helped himself to my sandwiches. I told him that what had happened with the mountain lion was baffling to me. In retrospect, it all seemed unreal. It was as if everything had been staged for my benefit. The succession of events had been so rapid that I really had not had time to be afraid. I had had enough time to act, but not to deliberate upon my circumstances. In writing my notes, the question of whether I had really seen the mountain lion came to mind. The dry branch was still fresh in my memory. "It was a mountain lion," Don Juan said imperatively. "Was it a real flesh-and-blood animal?" "Of course." I told him that my suspicions had been roused because of the easiness of the total event. It was as if the lion had been waiting out there and had been trained to do exactly what Don Juan had planned. He was unruffled by my barrage of skeptical remarks. He laughed at me. "You're a funny fellow," he said. "You saw and heard the cat. It was right under the tree where you were. He didn't smell you and jump at you because of the river willows. They kill any other smell, even for cats. You had a batch of them in your lap." I said that it wasn't that I doubted him, but that everything that had happened that night was extremely foreign to the events of my everyday life. For a while, as I was writing my notes, I even had the feeling that Don Juan may have been playing the role of the lion. However, I had to discard the idea because I'd really seen the dark shape of a four-legged animal charging at the cage and then leaping to the mesa. "Why do you make such a fuss?" he said. "It was just a big cat. There must be thousands of cats in those mountains. Big deal. As usual, you're focusing your attention on the wrong item. It makes no difference whatsoever whether it was a lion or my pants. Your feelings at that moment were what counted." In my entire life, I had never seen or heard a big wildcat on the prowl. When I thought of it, I couldn't get over the fact that I'd been only a few feet away from one. Don Juan listened patiently while I went over the entire experience. "Why the awe for the big cat?" he asked with an inquisitive expression. "You've been close to most of the animals that live around here, and you've never been so awed by them. Do you like cats?"
"No, I don't."
"Well, forget about it, then. The lesson wasn't on how to hunt lions, anyway."
"What was it about?"
"The little crow pointed out that specific spot to me, and at that spot I saw the opportunity of making you understand how one acts while one is in the mood of a warrior. Everything you did last night was done within a proper mood. You were controlled and at the same time abandoned when you jumped down from the tree to pick up the cage and run up to me. You weren't paralyzed with fear. And then, near the top of the bluff, when the lion let out a scream, you moved very well. I'm sure you wouldn't believe what you did if you looked at the bluff during the daytime. You had a degree of abandon, and at the same time, you had a degree of control over yourself. You didn't let go and wet your pants, and yet you let go and climbed that wall in complete darkness. You could have missed the trail and killed yourself. To climb that wall in darkness
require that you had to hold on to yourself and let go of yourself at the same time. That's what I call the mood of a warrior.
I said that whatever I'd done that night was the product of my fear, and not the result of any mood of control and abandon.
"I know that," he said, smiling. "And I wanted to show you that you can spur yourself beyond your limits if you're in the proper mood. A warrior makes his own mood. You didn't know that. Fear got you into the mood of a warrior, but now that you know about it, anything can serve to get you into it."
I wanted to argue with him, but my reasons weren't clear. I felt an inexplicable sense of annoyance.
"It's convenient to always act in such a mood," he continued. "It cuts through the crap and leaves one purified. It was a great feeling when you reached the top of the bluff, wasn't it?"
I told him that I understood what he meant, yet I felt it would be idiotic to try to apply what he was teaching me to everyday life.
"One needs the mood of a warrior for every single act," he said. "Otherwise, one becomes distorted and ugly. There's no power in a life that lacks this mood. Look at yourself. Everything offends and upsets you. You whine and complain and feel that everyone is making you dance to their tune. You're a leaf at the mercy of the wind. There's no power in your life. What an ugly feeling that must be. A warrior, on the other hand, is a hunter. He calculates everything. That's control. But once his calculations are over, he acts, he lets go. That's abandon. A warrior is not a leaf at the mercy of the wind. No one can push him. No one can make him do things against himself or against his better judgment. A warrior is tuned to survive, and he survives in the best of all possible fashions.
I liked his stance, although I thought it was unrealistic. It seemed too simplistic for the complex world in which I lived. He laughed at my arguments, and I insisted that the mood of a warrior couldn't possibly help me overcome the feeling of being offended or actually being injured by the actions of my fellow men, as in the hypothetical case of being physically harassed by a cruel and malicious person placed in a position of authority. He roared with laughter and admitted the example was apropos.
"A warrior could be injured, but not offended," he said. "For a warrior there is nothing offensive about the acts of his fellow men, as long as he himself is acting within the proper mood. The other night, you weren't offended by the lion. The fact that it chased us didn't anger you. I didn't hear you cursing it, nor did I hear you say that he had no right to follow us. It could have been a cruel and malicious lion, for all you know, but that wasn't a consideration when you struggled to avoid it. The only thing that was pertinent was to survive, and that you did very well. If you would have been alone and the lion had caught up with you and mauled you to death, you would have never even considered complaining or feeling offended by its acts. The mood of a warrior is not so far-fetched for yours or anybody's world. You need it in order to cut through all the guff."
I explained my way of reasoning. The lion and my fellow men were not on a par, because I knew the intimate quirks of men, while I knew nothing about the lion. What offended me about my fellow men was that they acted maliciously and knowingly.
I know, Don Juan said patiently. "To achieve the mood of a warrior isn't a simple matter. It is a revolution. To regard the lion and the water rats and our fellow men as equals is a magnificent act of the warrior's spirit. It takes power to do that."
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.